All right, we're going to be in here on the Vav Amud Bet with Rav Papa continuing to question other items outside of Nedarim, whether they have Sheikhut or relevance with regards to Yad. So over here we say, by Rav Papa, yesh Yad de Peah, oin Yad de Peah. Is there a Yad for Peah or not a Yad for Peah? The question really revolves around how Yad works, because we know that Yad compensates in some senses, or the Chiddush of Yad is that it compensates for two deficits. One deficit is the language deficit, which is you're not clearly articulating that which you want to say. You say a portion of what you want to say, and we are trying to complete it. The other thing that is true about a yad is that it's not always obvious exactly what you're saying, and therefore we are, either through context or through our assumption of what generally people would say, we're assuming that's what you mean in this instance. So both of those are deficits that Yad overcomes, and that's the Chiddush of Yad, that Yad works even though you have these deficits. So in the question, or the first question of Rav Papa, where he asks about Kiddushin, whether there's Yad the Kiddushin or any other Kiddushin, by Kiddushin there's no necessity for articulation. Kiddushin is not something that requires Hafla'a. On the other hand, Kiddushin does require Hochacha. We have to know what you're doing. We need to know exactly what you're trying to accomplish here, and therefore it has one of the two deficits that Yad would have the Gabei Nidarim. And when we come to Peah, and we come to Tzedakah, Peah and Tzedakah, on the other hand, are more along the lines of Nidarim, because in a sense they are forms of commitments or obligations. And as the Ran points out over here, and we're going to see this in the Gemara, that the question does not revolve around when someone designates an area for Peah, and it's insufficient to get to the sheer Peah that he needs, and therefore he has to add on more to get to the shir peah, that's obvious that that works, because all he's doing is appending to his original designation of peah something that would be peah anyway, because he needs to get to the minimum shir. So when we're talking about peah over here, we're talking about instances where it's in excess of the normal peah that one gives. In that instance, does yad the peah work, or does it not work? And the Gemara will qualify or explain for us this question. Number two is, the Ran believes that this question is a continuation of the previous question, which is, Imtim Salomar. If you want to say by Kiddushin, Ein Yad, that Yad doesn't work by Kiddushin, what about Peah? And we'll see again with Tzedakah, those items where there is something much closer to Nidarim, it's not exactly like Nidarim, we'll see, but it has a lot of common properties with Nidarim, as opposed to Kiddushin, which is really a different world in which we are using it. Gitin, also we use Yad, and there we're pretty clear that Yad does work by Gitin. Question is, by Kiddushin, does it work? And those are maybe a world unto themselves, slightly different than the Peah. Here we're closer to the area of Nidarim. So by Rav Papa, yesh Yad Peah, wein Yad Peah. When it says, hey Chidami, what exactly is the case? Ilei medamar hadein ugya lehavi Peah, that this either patch, the Ran calls like a vegetable patch, a vegetable garden, Rashi calls a sadeh, this field will be peah, vadei nami, and then he goes, and that one also, hayi peah maliatohi, that's not even a yad, that's straightforward peah, because he's saying this field or this garden patch is peah, and that too, it's just an extension of the original statement. All right, gigami vaile, what's the question? Kigon damar vadein. Velo amar nami. So here he says adain, but he doesn't add the word nami. Nami would obviously append it to the original statement and say this also. So that's clear. But when he just says this, it's not clear what the reference is. My, what is the din over here? Michlau. The Gemara says from this you're going to infer. The fact that you're willing to entertain this question means that you're willing to entertain. That a person can make his entire field into peah, even though peah means a corner of your field. Maybe you would think that you can only donate a corner to Peah. You can't make the entire field Peah. The Gemara says the fact that you're even entertaining this question shows us that you think you can make the entire field into Peah. And the Gemara says, in, that's true. Vatanya, Vatanya bin Nichuta, which is yes, that's the case. We have a bright minayim shumotze lasod kosa deo Peah, who say, how do we know that if a person wants to make his whole field into Peah, he has the right to do so? Temer lomar, pa'at sadecha. Instead of saying Peah, Sadecha, it says pa'at sadecha, which means that the whole sadeh could be the peah. And therefore, one can donate their whole field. Now, what the Ran explained, and I mentioned this when we started out, is that, again, it's not in a case where he has a deficit in the shiur peyah. It's a case where he's giving an excess of what the peyah is, and that's our safek over here. He gave enough in the first shot to cover whatever his obligations were vis-a-vis peyah. That's done. Then when he says vadein, this is the question. Because he has a right to donate in excess of the requirements of peyah, does adain mean I'm giving more? I'm giving my whole field. I'm donating more peyah than I need to. Or, because he already discharged his obligation vis-a-vis peyah, when he says vadein, we're not going to automatically interpret this as vadein nami, that this also, but rather adain will interpret, as the Gemara will say, as being something not meaningful towards peyah. Mi aminon, kevin de itkish the korbanot, since there's a hekesh in the psukim, in Devarim, that makes it like korbanot. Ma korbanot yesh lahem yad, apeya yesh la yad. Just like korbanot, which are a form of neder, have a yad associated with them. So too peya will function under the same rules, and therefore yad will work. And over here, ba'adein, in the context that he's saying it, and knowing that he can give in excess of the obligation of peya, it would work. Odilma. Ki itkish, the baal te'acherhu, the itkish. The hekesh is only with regards to the din of baal te'acher. That if one is obligated to give pe'ah, that they have to give it in a timely fashion. They can't hold it over a duration and not give it when they're supposed to. And therefore, when we connect it to korbanot, we only connect it for that din, not for the din of yad. And therefore, there's no yad by pe'ah. Now, the Gemara asks, v'heicha itkish. Where does this hekesh come from? You're speaking about a hekesh as if we know what it is. What is this hekesh? The Tanya, we have a Braita. This is from the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. If you remember, the Gemara there darshins the pasuk ki daroshi drashenu Hashem elokecha miimach. Over there, it's talking about nidarim, that if you make a neder, make sure you come and fulfill your neder. There, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah darshins different pieces there, and we're going to have another one in a second. Miimach refers to ze leket shechal peyah. Beficha, that refers to tztokah. Over there, the Gemara extends the requirements to fulfill your obligations vis-a-vis nedarim with regards to leket shechah and peyah, with regards to donations to tzedakah. All of those fall under this pasuk that Hashem will come after you if you do not fulfill your obligations. So the Gemara wants to know, how far does that hekesh go? Does that hekesh simply mean don't delay, don't tarry in fulfilling your obligations? Or does that hekesh a full-fledged hekesh to the sense that even a yad that works by korbanot will also work over here by pe'ah? Now, the Ran asks the question, the Gemara itself will ask the question later, don't we have a general principle that we're not mekishin mechza? You can't make a hekesh the mechza. A hekesh either is or isn't. When you have this juxtaposition, you're going to learn the dinim, then either it's on or it's off. You can't say, oh, I'll learn it for this thing and not that thing, because the fact that the juxtaposition is there already makes it that there's some sort of free flow of information between the two items. How could you even ask over here, oh, maybe it'll be only for Baal Tacher and not for Yad? If there's a Hekesh, there is a Hekesh, and it works for everything. If there's no Hekesh, it doesn't work at all. So the Ran answers that over here it's different because the Leket Shechah and Peah are not explicit in the Pasuk. They're not written in the Pasuk. You don't see the word Peah in the Pasuk to say that the Hekesh is Legamre. It's through a Limud in the Pasuk, a Meimach, that it's included. So in that case, when you're making a riboy for something that is not explicitly mentioned in the pasuk, then you can have something called a chatzi hekesh or hekesh the mechza. Tosafot, on the other hand, says that you can have a hekesh the mechza over here because there's so many items mentioned in that pasuk. It's not just one item. We're going to see it's taka, leket, shikha, peyah, korbanot. You have all these items. So maybe in instances like that, a hekesh can work on something that is more generic, or a common denominator between all items, rather than everything is going to work all across the board. And the fact that there's so many items in there, maybe that limits the hekesh's ability to create an overarching principles for all these dinim, but rather maybe looks for a single item that's applicable to everything, which is baal te'acher. That's a common denominator between all these things that are mentioned in the pasuk. That's why earlier the Ran kept asking, when we had the hekesh between nidarim and nizirut, the Ran kept asking the question, how come we don't learn from Nizirut to Nidarim? First of all, Stam, Nizirut is 30 days. How come we don't learn from Nizirut to Nidarim? Other things, by Nizirut that has a Kitsuta, like we said before, how come we don't learn that over to Nidarim? All of these things that were there, the Ran kept asking, why doesn't the Hekesh work? Why doesn't the Hekesh work? And he gave an answer every time. But it's clear there, we have neder against nizirut, he wants the hekesh to be complete. And every time he has to ask if it's true by neder, if it's true by nizirut, why isn't it true by the other case? Now, the Gemara leaves this unresolved, and moves on to the next question, which is, yesh yad tzedaka, o ein yad tzedaka. So over here, there's a machloket, the Ran brings from his rabutai, brings from his rebbeim, that they think that this is an imtim tzalomar, which is that we now, if we conclude with peyah, that peyah has yad, then what is the din over here? If you say yad peyah, do you also say yad litztaka? Because peyah is something they have to give baal korchei. Peyah is an obligation that comes out of the Torah, but you don't have a choice about it. It's not a voluntary type of thing. Therefore, if you have yad over there, maybe because it's domeh lekorbanot, once you obligate yourself in it, there's an obligation to give it. On the other hand, tzedaka, which is completely voluntary, maybe over there the din of yad would be different. That's the way his rebbeim suggested. The Ran rejects this principle of his rebbeim, and he says, I don't see the difference. Tzedaka is no different than peyah. Peyah has a minimum shiur that you have to give, and then one can give in excess of that amount. Tzedaka is the same way. There is a minimum amount of tzedaka that a person has to give. The Gemara lays that out. In other places, it's not so much, but you have a minimum amount of tzedakah that a person has to give per year. And then what you give in excess of that is voluntary. Okay, that's fine. But they look the same then. They look exactly the same. The question in the Gemara in both cases is not about the obligatory part. Because again, the Gemara says it's obvious that you can extend. If you have a minimum shiur and you're trying to extend your statement into that shiur, it's clear that it works. The only case is the question of voluntarily. When you give voluntarily, can you extend it through a yad? And therefore the Ran sees these as being parallel questions and not an imtim tzalomar. Makes a big difference, we'll see later, with regards to psak halacha, whether you see this as an imtim tzalomar or independent. And therefore, the Ran says, these two questions were not asked at the same time, they were asked independently, and they have no connection between them. That's why they're brought here, because they're similar ilk, but not because there's a connection between them. And actually, to him, the questions are exactly the same. One question is about peyah, one question is about tzedakah. In the end, they're actually the same question, because they're asking about instances where you're giving in excess of the obligatory piece of this item. The Ran's Rebbeim could argue on two levels. One is they can argue on the fact that maybe tzedakah doesn't have an obligatory piece to it, which we know is not necessarily true because the Gemara is pretty explicit about it. But seemingly they're arguing about whether peyah and tzedakah really look the same, which is that by peyah, the minimum shiur is not just one nitina. It's a whole section, it's a whole shiur that is a large tract or area. And then when you go and add on an excess of that, then you're adding on to what's already a big block. On the other hand, by tzedakah, each giving or each nitinah is a discrete mitzvah with regards to tzedakah. Just because you gave tzedakah today, doesn't mean when you give it tomorrow, that's just an extension of the original tzedakah. That's a new mitzvah of tzedakah. Versus by peyah, where peyah is one single mitzvah. Every field has to give peyah. If you give more, it's just an extension of the peyah that is obligatory in the field. And therefore, what they might think is that peyah and tzedakah are different, even the voluntary piece. Because by peyah, the voluntary piece is clearly an extension of the core obligation, or the core mitzvah, versus tzedakah, where every tzedakah, or every giving, every nitinah is an independent piece. And that's why they might think that it's an imtim salomar over here. Or, as well, so Vaishak points out that tzedakah might be unique, even vis-a-vis other nidarim, because tzedakah is a type of neder that generates an obligation without any requisite isurim associated with it. Versus nidre isur and nidre agdesh, where there are isurim that are generated through the neder, that's not true by tzedakah. You might ask again, Eichidami, what exactly is the case? Ilema damar hadein zuzalet tzedakah vadein nami. This coin goes to tzedakah, and this one also. Hau tzedakah tzmahi. That is straightforward tzedakah. It's very clear there what you were doing. That's a yad mochiach. That is, clearly works. Elakon damar hadein, velo amar nami. Again, he does hadein without the nami. What does this mean? My, what's the din? Hadein nami tzedakah kamar. When he says the word hadein, he means this also is tzedakah. Or dilma mai vadein, lenafkuta ba'alma kamar. So he is really saying that this coin is going for tzedakah. And this coin is going to buy my ice cream for today. And he just didn't finish the remainder of his sentence. We don't know what the vahadein means over here. And this one, does and this one mean, and this one also for tzedakah? Or and this one I have for something else in mind for. This one's for tzedakah, and this I have something else in mind for. Therefore the hadein is unclear over here as to what you're trying to do. Mi amrina, kevin zid kash to korbanot, since it's ekesh to korbanot, Dichtib b'ficha. Again, another word that's found in that pasuk in Devarim that talks about the obligations to bring your nedarim, not to be ma'acher, and to fulfill whatever comes out of your mouth. So too by tztaka, there is that obligation. Zot tztaka. Mok korbanot yesh lehem yad, av tztaka yesh la yad. Just like korbanot have a yad, so too tztaka will have a yad. And over here, we'll invoke the principle of yad over here in order to obligate the individual and say in the context of his statement, it seems to make a lot of sense that he's saying this other coin is for tztaka. Odilma. The Baal Ta'acher who the Itkish. Do we say that it is for Baal Ta'acher that there is a Hekesh? The same question that we had by Peah. The Ran again sees these as parallel questions. That's why the movement through the Gemara is almost identical, because they're the same question. One about Peah, one about Tztaka, but it's the same question. According to Rebbeim, this is a question built upon the assumption that if by Peah there is a Yad, then the question exists by Tztaka. Then we have another question. Yesh Yad the Hefker. Odilma ain yad the hefker. Do we have a yad by hefker, or do we not have a yad by hefker? Mar says, Ainu tztaka. This is similar to tztaka. So now, when the Gemara compares this tztaka, then it's saying that if hefker and tztaka are the same thing, whatever's true by tztaka will also be true by hefker. So now, the Gemara says, Imtim salomar kamar. The Gemara is saying, if. So here, the Gemara itself is explicit that this question is built upon the answer to the previous question. Im tim saloma yesh yad tztaka. If we agree that there is yad by tztaka, then hekesh the mechza. So now already they bring up this principle of ein hekesh the mechza. Therefore, there's definitely yad by tztaka from the fact that it's mentioned in the posuk about nidre korbanot. Beficha teaches you tztaka. And therefore, there's yad. Hefker miyamrina and hainu tztaka. Do we say hefker is equated to tztaka? Odilma shiny tztaka, that tztaka lo chazi alo aniim. Because tztaka is only granted to poor people. Aval hefker, ben le aniim, ben le ashirim. But hefker has a different rule to it, which is that it's granted both to aniim and to ashirim. So now, in this question is embedded some information about tztaka and some distinctions between tztaka and hefker. The first is that it might be easier to give tztaka than it is to give or to make something hefker. And that is for two reasons. One is that we know that if you give or have in mind to give tztaka, if a person is gamar bilibo to give tztaka, then it works as tztaka. That becomes a commitment to give tztaka. So truthfully, by tztaka, you don't even have to articulate the granting of tztaka. Oh, so very good. Once you say that, then why is the Gemara even contemplating the issue of yad by tztaka if you can just do it libo? If Gemara be libo to do it, then it's done. You're obligated to give tztaka. So what the Rosh says over here is that it's a case where he was not Gemar be libo. But Gemar be libo means that you've come to the conclusion that you're going to give tztaka. Once you've made that conclusion and come to the definitive decision that you are going to give tztaka, even believe it's sufficient. On the other hand, in a case where the guy is waffling, are uncertain about giving the tztaka, and he thinks he's going to give it, then the articulation will become important, because that will become the gemirat alev. And that's where yad will kick in as a question as to whether yad works or does not work. That's number one. The second thing is, the fact that the Gemara distinguishes between hefker and tztaka, that tztaka only goes to aniim, and hefker goes to aniim vashirim, that means that in a certain sense, you retain a certain amount of control even when you give tztaka. Because tztaka has to go to aniim, that means that you can't just say the money is tztaka and it goes wherever it goes. That's not true. You have to ascertain or make sure or be certain that the money reaches aniim now, because you basically committed it to the aniim. That means that you retain a certain amount of ownership over the tztaka in ensuring that it gets to the right party or objective. And therefore, it's easier, in a sense, to make tztaka than it is to make hefker, because you retain a certain amount of ownership. Hefker, on the other hand, which goes to aniim or ashirim, basically is a relinquishment of your control over the item completely. That means that once you are mafkir, in a sense, you've just backed away from it, and whatever happens, happens. That you don't have any, then, requirement to ensure that it gets anywhere. Whatever happens, happens, because you've relinquished all control to it. So therefore, in a sense, it's harder to create hefker than it is to create tztaka because of that complete relinquishment of control. If that's the case, then why is there any parallel between hefker and tztaka? So Tosafot says, and it's an interesting idea, that when it comes to hefker, most people are mafkir the nechassim as an intent for tzedakah. They're not mafkir just to get rid of it and say, I don't need it anymore. But usually when they're mafkir it, it's a way to give it to others who might need it. Now, it's true, it doesn't work like tzedakah that has to go to aniyim, but the relinquishment of control is really to donate it, in a sense, to whomever needs it. Same way that you put something out on the sidewalk and they're expecting the garbage men to come and collect it, even though maybe it's functional, maybe even though it works, in terms of your concern, you don't want it anymore, you don't need it anymore, so you put it out there. And if someone comes and picks it up, you'd be just as happy, in a sense, whether the garbage men take it or whether someone who can use it takes it, because in a sense, you are donating it to whoever could use it. If it can't be used, then it goes to the garbage. But in that sense, hefker is like tzedakah in the fact that you're willing to give it or grant it to anybody who it has utility for. The Gemara, again, leaves it without any answer. Now, Boi Ravina, Yesha de Beit Kisei Odo. Now here the Gemara jumps to a totally different topic, which is when it comes to the designation of an area to be a place that is going to be mitunaf. We know that from the Gemara in Brachot already that one is not allowed to daven, one is not allowed to say Shema in places that are mitunafim. They have both a bathroom, a place where a person has defecated, a location that is a Beit HaMerchatz where people walk around naked. All of these places are inappropriate to daven in, and one may not daven in these places. There is also, we saw in the Gemara Megillah, a din of zimun, which is if that one already designates an area, whether it's for a Beit Knesset, or on the opposite side, for a Beit HaKisei, to be a bathroom, that already that area might take on the properties of a bathroom, even though it has not been utilized, and therefore you will not be able to daven in that location. Because that location has been deemed or designated to be the bathroom, you may no longer daven in that location because of that zimon, that preparation or that designation that you make. That's a din d'rabbanan. And the Gemara wants to know now that yesh yad beit kisei olo. When you have this zimon, the beit kisei, since it's functioning as, in a sense, a neder is a commitment to do something. So here, instead of a commitment to do something, it's a commitment of the location to be for a certain utility. Once you made that commitment, is it now in force or is it not in force? So now the Gemara wants to know if that works in the same way. Does Yad work over here or not? Hey, Chidami, what's the case? If you say this house will be a bathroom, but they nami, and so do this one. Again, how beit kisei nami hava? That's not even a question because that's a clear articulation of your intent. You're saying, I want this to be a bathroom, and so too this. That's very clear that you mean both of them to be bathrooms. This is the men's bathroom, this is the women's bathroom. That's not a question, that's an extension. Ela kanun damar vadein. In a case where he says the dein again, velo amar nami. So what is vadein, damar? Vadein, nami, beta kisei. When he says this, what does he mean? Does he mean this also is a bathroom? Hodoma mai vadein, the tashmisha ba'alma kamar. That this is for something else. The same way we had by the coin where he says, this one's for tzedakah. And this one, and he doesn't finish his sentence, was, oh, this one's to kick my kids out for ice cream. Same thing over here. This room's going to be the bathroom. And this, oh, that's going to be my dining room. That's going to be my bedroom. The other part of the sentence wasn't completed. So what do we say there? Michlal. Now, the Gemara takes a step back and says, the pshit delay the ravina, the yeshim zimun the beit kisei. This is a question that is raised in the Gemara in Megillah as to whether there is zimun the beit kisei, and it's not clear that that works. It might be, and the machloket is, whether simple designation of a location to be utilized in a certain manner is enough to give it that shame, or do you have to use it once? Once you've used it once, then it becomes a beit kisei. As opposed to a location that's not designated for a beit kisei, if you use it, you could argue that it's a temporary thing, and therefore it doesn't take on a shame beit kisei, and if you remove the tinuf, then the room would go back to its original standing, which is that it was a room that was, could have been a bedroom, could be whatever it is. So maybe zimun only works when used for that purpose as well. But if you don't use it, maybe zimun doesn't work at all. The Gemara is now challenging Ravina and saying that Ravina must believe that zimun by itself is sufficient. The fact that he's even posing this question means that he thinks that preparation or designation of an area is sufficient. Vaha mi baile the Ravina. Didn't Ravina actually ask this question, which is, his minu lebeit kisei mahu. He's minu the Beit HaMerchatz. Ma'o the Gra takes out the question with regards to the second piece, which is Beit HaMerchatz. But does this not work by a Beit HaKisei? Zimun Moyo or in Zimun Moyo? The answer of the Gemara is exactly what you're saying, which is Ravina Chadami Go Chadakamai Baile. He's asking a nested question, which is, Zimun Moyil, or Ein Zimun Moyil? Does Zimun work or not? Im Tim Salomar Yesh Zimun, if you say that Zimun works, then here's my nested question, which is, Yesh Yad or Ein Yad? Once you've determined that Zimun does work, then I want to ask a secondary question, which is there a Yad or no Yad? Tibayile. The Gemara ends off with Tibayile. Now, Tibayile is not something that we are familiar with. When we use it in the Bavli in general, Tibayile means, I would ask the question in this manner, I would ask the question in the other manner. So it's basically when you have two opinions, and we have a question, we'll say, this question is applicable to this Shita, and it's also applicable to this Shita. It's not used in the manner that the Gemara is using it here. And the Bali at Tosfot say that Tibayile means Teku, over here. And he says, V'lashon Nidarim Mishuneh, that the Lashon of Nidarim is different. And as I mentioned in the beginning of the Masechta, and we'll see it again when we start Nazir, the Nidarim and Nazir have that common denominator to them, which is that they have certain Lashonot that are found only in these Masechtot that don't appear or don't function in this way in any other Masechtot. And this is one of them. Tibayile, to be used instead of Teiku, is unusual. And again, the Rishonim pass it off as being that these Masechtot are unusual. By Nazir, it's much more pronounced. And maybe there's more explanation. When we get to Nazir, we'll speak about it. Nidarim is a Masechta that has much more coverage. And the Rishonim discuss it and it's brought up in other Masechtot as well. And therefore, it's harder to argue the same things with regards to Masechta Nidarim. But it's clear here that Tosafot acknowledges that this is an unusual type of language. And now we have a Teiku. The question is, what do you do with this Teiku? First of all, where does the Teiku reference? Right? How many of the cases does it reference? And number two is, once I have a Teiku, what do I do with the Teiku? So now, the Ran quotes the Ramban, who says that in all of these cases, we go L'chumra, the Rashba, all the Suriya Rashba, the Ramban, the Chotav, that they say that we go L'chumra. Because we learned that Chol Teiku Li Yisura, any Teiku that refers to Nisur, is the Chumra. So now, the Ran breaks down this into two possibilities. One is, as he says, is, as we mentioned many times when we learned together, the Rambam has a Shita, which is, if the Gemara brings up an Imtim Salomar, then we assume the Halacha is like the Imtim Salomar. So over here, where the Gemara said before, with regards to Hefker, what was the question? The Gemara says, Imtim Salomar, yesh yad litztaka, then there's a question by Hefker. That means that the Gemara, according to the Rambam, has concluded that staka does have a yad. He says, that works well, the Ran says, for the Rambam Shita, that we would pass in the Chumra in cases of Imtim Salomar. So here we had before Yad Kiddushin. Yad Kiddushin is clearly an issue of Isur. Since it's a question of Isur, we're going to go to Chumra. Then by Peah, Salomar by Staka and moved on to Hefker. So according to the Rambam again, that would mean that Staka has a Yad. And maybe according to the Ran, who thinks that they are joint questions, then that would also mean that Peah has a Yad. Or according to his Rebbeim, which says that Imtim Salomar Yesh Yad the Peah, and then you move on to Tztaka, then Peah also has a Yad. So it's pretty clear that Peah has a Yad. Then there's Zimun over here. What the Ran says is, by Zimun it's clear that we pass in the Kula, because it's a Din Derabonon. It's a Din Derabonon. This whole idea of Zimun is a Din Derabonon, and therefore we're going to pass in the Kula, because the Gemara left that clearly as a Teiku. With regards to Tztaka, this is where he argues on the Ramban and the Rashba. By Tztaka, the Ramban and the Rashba say that it's a Teiku of Isura. Since the Teiku of Isura goes to Chumra, and the Ran says, what are you talking about? What type of Isura do we have over here? Tztaka, Maiserani, Laket, Shikha, and Peah, all of these items are considered to be Dinei Mimononot, and not Dinei di Isura. And he shows in many places in Shas that the Gemara asks about Maiserani and says, oh, don't worry about it, it's a Motzi Mechaver Olav Araya. There's no Isur involved with it, it's simply a monetary matter. And therefore, the Ran says that he doesn't understand the conclusion of the Rashba and the Ramban. Again, if you hold like the Rambam, it's easier because then you have the Imtim Salomar to Hefker and you can pass in that way. But if you don't say that, to say that the reason behind Staka is because it's Isura, he's not willing to accept. And he says that Staka is not Isura. Staka is Mimononot. And we have a Din, Teiku by Mimononot goes the Kula, not the Chumra. And therefore, the Ran says he doesn't see the conclusion of the Rashba and the Ramban. And he says the same thing with regards to Hefker. Hefker is definitely Dinei Mimononot. And therefore you have a Teiku here, which remains Speka Mimona Lekula. And therefore it also should be the Kula by Tztaka, by Hefker, and by Zimun. All of these we should pass in the Kula. As verse says, Dushin, where we would pass in the chumra. Like when you talk about Maiser Sheni. Maiser Sheni involves an Isur if you eat it not outside of Yerushalayim. If you take it off, if you're mafish it, it's matir the remainder. Like Maiser Ani, we're mafish it, and then it's motzi mechaber ol avaraya, which means that once you've been mafish the Maiser Ani, the only restriction is a monetary restriction, which means that it's a motzi mechaber ol avaraya. Maiser Sheni, even after it's removed and changes the item from being tevel to non-tevel, there's still an independent restriction on Maiser Sheni that it must be eaten in Yerushalayim. By lechet shichcha and peyah, there is a restriction, there's a problem if you don't take it off. But once you've removed it, they simply become a monetary issue. Once it's been removed, the Gemara asks in other places, what do you do with safek peyah, safek lechet? All of these items, what is the standard for the safek and all of these items? That means that the Gemara is looking at it as a monetary issue, not as a issue of Isur. Based on that, the safek by peyah is a safek of mimononot. It's a mamon safek, just like by tzedakah. And therefore, the Ran believes in these cases you should go to Kula by Peyan Stakah. This is especially the Ran Lashitato says that Peyan Stakah are the similar question. They are a question not premised on each other, but the exact same question. According to the Rebbeim, who says Zinim Tim Salomar, then Peyah would be the Isur, at least if you hold like the Rambam. But based on the Ran Lashitato, he thinks that Peyah, Stakah, Hefker, and Zimun are all a Teku Lukula, and therefore you pass no Yad by any of those items. According to the Rambam, if it's Zinim Tim Salomar, then Stakah would be, according to the Rebbeim of the Ran, even Peyah would be. And according to the Ramban and the Roshba, even though they don't hold like the Rambam Zim Tim Salomar, they say that Stakah and Peyah are Isura. And since they are Isura, we pass an Alocha, Lechumra in that case. And that's what the Ran is grappling with. He doesn't see it as being Isura, he sees it being Mimono. Menuda Anilacha. That is the last line in our Mishnah. The last line in our Mishnah says, with regards to Menuda Anilacha, then Rabbi Akiva says, that Rabbi Akiva used to lean to be machmir over here. We discussed the Lashon of Hochech over there, what exactly it means. But the one thing we need to clarify beforehand, and this is a Machloket Rishonim over here, which is that we already concluded that the Lacha is like Shmuel. The Lacha is like Shmuel, that our Mishnah is Alpi Rabbi Yehuda, that you need a Yad that is Mochiach, and therefore the first three Lashonot that we brought, Ruchukani Mimcha, Mufushani Mimcha, Mudrani Mimcha are not sufficient by themselves. You have to add on the appendix of Shani Ochel Lecha. So the same question arises here. When we say Menuda Ani Lecha, Ran believes that you have to add on Shani Ochel Lecha. That Menuda Ani Lecha by itself is no different than Ruchukani, Mifushani, or Mudrani. And therefore, the Ran believes over here, when we say, the Gemara says over here, Menuda Ani Lecha, it's governed by the same rules that we had before, and that means that he says, Menuda Ani Lecha, Shani Ochel Lecha. That's a given. That's what he said over here. And that's where the question arises. Other Rishonim believe that the Lashon of Menudeh is much stronger than the Lashon of Mifushani, Mirchukani, Mudrani, where there you could reinterpret it to mean something like, I'm not doing business with you, I don't want to stand next to you, all those other interpretations that we gave, there it's a Yad She'inu Mochiach. But when I say Menudeh, that's already a Yad Mochiach. Because Menudeh, Nidui, is some sort of excommunication, and it's very clear that when you're trying to push somebody away with a menudeh, that you're trying to generate a neder that involves an isra hana'ah associated with it, and therefore it's a yad mochiach, and you would not need the appendix of she'ani ochel lecha. So just know that the Ran brings that you do need it. There are other rishonim over here, like the Tosafot, who says you do not need the actual language of she'ani ochel lecha. Right, so now the Gemara says, Amrabai, Moder Rabbi Akiva, Linin Malkot, She'enu loke. Rabbi Akiva agrees that when it comes to Malkot, you don't get Malkot. Now, there are two ways to say this. One is because when he says Hochech Bala Hachmir, it depends how you translate Hochech. Before, some we said that it's Hochech is, it's a Safek. And some it's a Safek Isura, we go to Chumra. So you could argue from the side of Safek, the reason Rabbi Akiva says it's Asur is because a Safek, you'll go to Chumra. But by Malkot, we're not going to give Malkot unless we're certain about that. And that's what Abaye's conclusion is, that the fact is that he is saying it's asur mi safek, and since he says it's asur mi safek, then malkot would not be applicable. That's one way to read it. Or the Tosafot over here reads it as arichut alashon. The fact that Rabbi Kiva said it in not in a straightforward manner, but in this hochech bala achmir, which is a strange language, it means that the Mishnah is trying to indicate that this is sufficient to generate isur, is not sufficient to generate malkot. Not mitzad safek, but mitzad that there are maybe nidarim, or levels of pushing away which do not involve a chiyuv malkot, which is that there must be certain types of nidarim, which are full-fledged nidarim that generate not only an isur, but also generate a chiyuv malkot. And maybe there are other languages, they are a subpar type of language that only generates an isur, but not a chiyuv malkot. And therefore over here, that's what Rabbi Akiva is suggesting, that this language is only strong enough to generate an isur, it's not strong enough to generate a malkot. So now Gemara says, because the imkain, nitne Rabbi Akiva machmir. Because if that's what they wanted to say, that it was involved with malkot, they just say, Rabbi Akiva's machmir. So again, in that case, you would say no longer it's a safek. That's what his psak is. Or, according to the other lashon, which is, what is it, all this hochech balahachmir? Just say lachmir. The fact that he adds in that extra language shows you that there is some deficit here beyond simply the fact that it's a sur, but there might be some deficit that doesn't let you get malkot. Amar Rav Papa, binedina minach, dekulei amar lo plegei dasur. Everybody agrees if you lose the lashon of nedina, that creates a neder. Misham tana minach, dekulei amar shari. You use the lashon of shamto, everybody agrees you are mertar. But my plige, where do they argue? Biminude ani lecha. In the case where he uses a lashon of nidui, Rabbi Akiva savar lishna din nidu yahu, he thinks that it's a lashon of nidui of excommunication. Rabbanan savar lishna de mishamtanohu. It's lashon of mishamtano. So what you have here are three different languages that are used for excommunication. And they are also different levels of excommunication, each one being a higher level than the other. So what the Gemara suggests over here is that the word mishamtano is a lashon that is only used and solely used for putting someone into nidui. There's no other meaning for the language. In Bavel, when they used to put somebody into nidui, they would say shamta. We see that throughout the Gemara. Why don't you put him into shamta? Shamte. That lashon is a lashon of nidui and cannot be lifted over into the world of nidarim because it belongs to the world of nidui. Therefore, if one utilizes the word of shamta, then there's nothing to discuss in terms of neder, because it's a language that is solely and uniquely for nidui. And because of that, there is no question over here. Whenever you use the lashon of shamtana, we're not dealing with the neder. On the other hand, the word of nedino is a lashon that is used both by nidui, but also used by nidarim. And therefore, everybody agrees by lashon of nedina that if you speak to an individual in that way, you don't have a right necessarily to put him into nidui. That's not your job. That's not your right necessarily to put him into nidui. And therefore, the nidina, the context of an individual saying it to another party, we're going to assume that means a lashon neder. Because when you put someone into nidui, it has different effects. One effect of the nidui is the person becomes a minudeh, a shame minudeh, but it also has ramifications in terms of your interactions with him. The interactions with that person now are limited because he is in nidui. So because of that, when you use the lashon nedina, it's clear that you're trying to utilize that aspect of nidui. That aspect of nidui, which is these restrictions of interacting with him, that's what you're trying to utilize here, and that works as a neder. So menudeh, we're not sure. We're not sure what he means in the case of menudeh. The word nidui has multiple meanings. Shamta has only one meaning. That's to excommunicate someone. The word nidui, we call it nidui, which is excommunication. But nidui has multiple meanings. The word nida in the Torah means to be mufrash or to be separated. So nidui can mean, like the nida means mufrashani mimcha, like we have in our Mishnah, lashon of neder. Or minudeh can mean like excommunication. The process, which is known as excommunication, that can mean that you're trying to put that person into that process, that talich of becoming a minudeh. But it's not clear from the language. Again, the language of nedina, which is the original language, is a language that generally means to push away or to separate. And based on that, now we have a case where we know for sure it doesn't work as a neder, a case where it does work as a neder, and then there's in-between stage of minudeh, which is we're uncertain as to whether you're using it as a distancing language or as a language of excommunication. And that's what Rabbi Akiva says, no, it's like the case of nedina, and therefore it has a din of a neder. And the Chachamim say, no, it has a lashon like shamto, even though minudeh has these multiple languages, its overwhelming usage is a usage for excommunication and not for the other. And therefore, when someone uses it, they're trying to excommunicate. Now, there is a Yerushalmi The Ran brings down the Yerushalmi and says that it's not relevant to our Gemara. He says, this Yerushalmi has nothing to do with our Gemara over here, which is that Rabbi Akiva Yochechek Bezed Achmir Lesert Kol Nechasav. Kamada Teimar Yecharam Kol Ruchusho. That a person is machrim all of his possessions, who yibadel. Mabdin Le Rabbanan Chomer Hu Benidui Beitin. That's only true by Nidui Beitin. And what the Ran says over here is that it's very clear. Elevadei Cherim Shel Beitin Agadol Shiny. Talim Tvei. Abobu Cherim Beitin Ba'almo Lo Mitzarei Nechsayu. What the Ran says over here is that they have different levels of excommunication. And in those levels of excommunication, at certain times, the possessions of the individual become asur. In other cases, the possessions of the individual do not become asur. So what the Yerushalmi says now is, so since he's like a menudeh, therefore his possessions are asurim, because that's an extension of being a menudeh. A menudeh also has an isur anah associated with his possessions. So what the question here is, when you use lashon menudeh, am I making myself into like an excommunicated person, and therefore my possessions are asurim? But he says it's clear from our Gemara here in the Bavli that the reason that menudeh is working has nothing to do with being in excommunication. It's a question about the language itself. Does the language itself mean harchaka, or does the language itself mean excommunication? And so therefore he says that the Bavli and Yerushalmi are working on different paths totally. The Yerushalmi believes that the menudeh has a isur anah associated with him, and therefore what you're trying to do is basically become a menudeh and make your possessions asur to everybody else. On the other hand, the Bavli is saying, no, menudeh is just simply, is that miruchukani? Is that the same thing as using a lashon of miruchukani? And therefore, he says that they are running on different paths, and you cannot correlate between the Yerushalmi and the Bavli over here. And therefore, he believes, according to the Bavli, Gemara say the next lashon of mishamtano is clearly mutar. Well, if nidui generates an isur anah, then mishamtano should be the strongest way to generate an isur anah. Elavadai kidamran. Mazli be what we say. Miu, katav rab nebaruch bar Shmuel beperushav, tamashmina behedja, dimindunesh, dinu beitin, asurlein, ot minchasav. But from this Gemara you see that if a person is put into excommunication, then you are asur in his possessions. Abon nidau hedjot, mutar. But if a regular individual does it, then it's mutar. And that's the difference here between shamto and nidui. Nidui can be done by an individual, whereas shamto can be done only by a beitin. So beitin has the power to make your possessions asurim. An individual doesn't have the ability to make your possessions asurim. Vein din ze mechuvar. He says that doesn't make any sense. Because he says if you look in the Gemara in Moed Katan, Gemara Moed Katan compares between an ovel and a menudeh. And a lot of all the dinim of menudeh are listed there in Moed Katan because of the overlap between actually three different areas. Mitzora, menudeh, and ovel. They all have a lot of similar halachot, and the Gemara deals with them all there. So over there it says that you're allowed to teach a menudeh, you're allowed to learn with a menudeh, you're allowed to hire him, he's allowed to pay you. All those seem to be no restrictions on isur anah. And therefore, the Iran disagrees and says that not only is there no isur anah when an individual puts something into nidui, there's also no isur anah when beitin puts somebody into an isur anah. The only time you have an isur anah is when the beitin agadol. That's a serious isur, and there's only isur anah, but other than that, there's no isur anah associated with nidui. And obviously the Ran's running with the idea in the Bavli that the issue at hand here is the language used, not the fact that there's an isur anah associated with that. If you disagree with the Ran, and you say that nidui generates an isur anah, then you can understand what the Gemara here might be chasing like the Yerushalmi, which is, this guy is trying to be matpis through nidui into neder. And since the hatpasa has an isur anah associated with it, maybe that isur anah can now transfer it into nidorim as well. And even though mishamtana is a form of nidui, but mishamtana is so unique in its usage to be solely for excommunication, therefore you can't excuse it to be matpis because it's just not a language that's used outside of shamta. But maybe minudar and dina would have that function. That would be the machlokas here between the Ran and others about how the Gemara here is working. The Gemara we're working simply on the language means something, or is it working on through a hatpasa to the isur anah associated with excommunication? All right, upligi the Rav Chisda. The way that we've set it up now definitely disagrees with Rav Chisda. Do gavro damer mishamtanim nichsei debrei the Rav Yirmiyah ba'abo. This individual says that I am using this word shamtano, which clearly here he's trying to make an isur anah in the possessions of the son of Rav Yirmiyah ba'abo. After the kamei the Rav Chisda. Afterwards, it came to Rav Chisda to understand whether this nether was in force or not in force. Says nobody worries about the position of Rabbi Akiva. Because Savar, he clearly holds Mishamtana Plige. The fact that he brings up Rabbi Akiva in the context of Mishamtana means that he thinks that even in Shamtana, there's a Machloket Chachamim and Rabbi Akiva. And he says, we don't worry about Rabbi Akiva. But according to the way that we set it up before, we said that Mishamtana, everybody agrees is Mutar, even Rabbi Akiva. And therefore, there's no relevance to say, we don't worry about Rabbi Akiva. No, we don't worry about Rabbi Akiva, because even Rabbi Akiva agrees in that case. So the fact that Rav Chisda says that means that he disagrees and thinks they argue even in Shamtana. And the conclusion, according to Ran, Alocha, is that we're not chash for Rabbi Akiva. We're not chash for Rabbi Akiva both with Shamtana, and we're also not chash for Rabbi Akiva by Minudah. Because the Alocha is, Rabbi Akiva may chavei ro, but not like Rabbi Akiva may chavei rav. So over here, the Rabbanon are arguing on Rabbi Akiva, and therefore the Alocha will not be like Rabbi Akiva. Amar Rabbi Ila, Amar Rav. Nidau bifanav, ematrim lo elo bifanav. If he's put into excommunication face to face, then he may not be removed from excommunication, ela mi face to face. Nidau shalo bifanav. If they put him into excommunication when he was not present, matirin lo ben bifanav, ben shalo bifanav. Then they can be matir, they can undo the excommunication whether he is present or he's not present. Now there is a major machloket as to why you have to do it face to face. When you put him in nidoy, why do you have to release him face to face? So now the Ran brings, the Tosafot also brings this, based on a Gemara that we have in Gitin, which says that anything that is done bifnei yud, in front of 10, requires the same 10 to release it. So if you require 10 people to put somebody into a certain status, then the same way you will require 10 people to undo them from that status. So the same thing over here. If you put somebody into nidoy face to face, the only way to release them from that nidoy is to do it face to face. Tosafot brings this down. The Ran quotes it as well, but then rejects it. The Ran says that velo nihira. He says that makes no sense to me. Ela time of the milto. The Ran says is mishum chashdo. It's a problem of chashad or marit ayin, which is this individual was put into something to excommunication, and other people are affected by this excommunication. The way they interact with him is governed by the excommunication. One day he's out there, and all of a sudden some guy starts to interact with him. You know what he's going to start thinking? He's going to start thinking that nidoy is not so strong. Or first of all, this guy doesn't care about nidoy, he doesn't care about excommunication. Or that people ignore excommunications of the rabbanon. So in order to avoid that problem, then we say, you have to be matter him bifanav. So that way he knows that the excommunication's been released, and the reason people are interacting with him is because he's been released from excommunication. So just like you put him in face-to-face, you take him out face-to-face. Whereas if you did it not face-to-face, then just like people all of a sudden started not interacting with him, even though he wasn't present when they gave the nidui, the same way people will interact with him when the nidui is taken away. Just like he'll think in his mind, they did this when I wasn't there. He'll also say the same thing, they did it when I wasn't there, they released me. And that's why people are acting that way. That's the way the Ran learns it. On the other hand, the Rosh brings, Sakadatcha amina lo yatziru lo bifanav, demit beyesh tfei. That doing something face to face is, first of all, a busha, but also a kavod, or respect that you have to give to the individual. So that in a case where you did it shalom bifanav, then you might think that you could only release him shalom bifanav and not bifanav, because to do it face to face to release him is an embarrassment that you can't do. If you put him into excommunication without him there, take him out without him there. Gemara answers the end, no, you can even do it bifanav. Bifanav, you do it in front of him, face to face, you put him into nidui, then you have to give him the kavod to bring him back face to face to release him from the nidui. Just like, in a sense, because of the severity or the seriousness of the issue, you brought him there and did it face to face with him, and you, in a sense, were embarrassing him. And you should have to, in the same way, when you release him, you have to give him that same courtesy to bring him in and give him the kavod and say, now we respect that you've complied whatever it is that we're putting you into nidui for, and therefore we're releasing you from it. And some say the reason you have to do it bifanav is because, again, this idea of kavod, but also to placate the individual. You embarrass them by putting them into shamtav in front of them, it face to face. Now you, in a sense, have to ask for mechila, or placate them in a way that they accept the release from the excommunication, but also forgive you for the embarrassment. They've understood why you did it, and they accept why it was done. And therefore, you do it face-to-face in order to plead with them to forgive the individual for doing such a thing. So here you have three different approaches as to why it has to be done face-to-face. either because the nidui is so strong that you cannot be released without it being face to face, which is like with the Tosafot quote. So when you put somebody in through a minyan, you have to take them out through a minyan, the same thing. The Iran who says it's a problem of chashdo, it's a problem of marit ayin, or in a way diminishing the power of nidui of the rabbanon if we don't do this. Or the Rosh who talks about an issue of kavod, or an issue of embarrassment, that you have to, in a sense, do it the same way that you put him in. You have to give him that same respect when you take him out of nidui. Amarav Chanin Amarav. Hashomea Azkarat Hashem mipi chaveiro tzarich lenaduto. Person who hears them use the Shem Hashem improperly, you have to put him into nidui. So this is, whether it's Shem Shemaim Levatala, if it's a Shem Sheina Tzricha, whatever the issue is, maybe even a Brocha Levatala, or a Brocha Sheina Tzricha, at least according to the Rambam, in this case, you have to put the person into nidui. Vim lo nidu, hu atzmo yehi nidui. And if you don't put him in excommunication, then the person himself who heard this and didn't put him into nidui, should be in nidui. Shekol makom shehazkarat Hashem mitzuya, shama niyut mitzuya. That any place that you find the mention of Hashem's name, now we're going to assume this in a negative light, we find the mention of Hashem's name improperly, shama niyut mitzuya, poverty spreads. Ve'aniyut kiminta. And poverty is equivalent to death. Shenemar ki meitu kol anashim ha'makshim enafshecha. Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, you can go back to Mitzrayim now, because the people who wanted to kill you are no longer there. Then Gemara explains that's talking about Datan v'Aviram. And we know that Datan and Aviram are around because they make cameo appearances later in Parshat Korach. So obviously they're not dead. So what is it? What's the only way that they could be dead? So the Gemara actually tells us later on in the Masechta that there are four chashuvim kemet. Mitzorah chashuv kemet. Ani chashuv kemet. Yishen lo banim chashuv kemet. And Sumah chashuv kemet. So all those are the four different things that are chashuv kemet. And Tosafot and Aran here go through. How do you know that which one it is? How do you know what happened to Datan ve'Aviram? They each go through. One, Suma, they can't be, because by Adat Korach it says, Hayenei anashim elu tinaker. You're going to knock out our eyes. What are you going to do? I mean, it's clear that they're seeing with their own eyes what's happening, and they're telling Moshe, we can see what's happening, and we're not going into Eretz Yisrael. You're misleading us here. So it's clear there that they didn't lose their vision, and they're not Sumaim. Mitzorayim, it cannot be, because it says that they were Bekerev Kol Yisrael, that they were amongst Klal Yisrael. Mitzorah has to be Michutz L'Machaneh. He is pushed out of the Machaneh. He can't be in the Machaneh Yisrael. The fact that Datan and Aviram are found Bekerev Kol Yisrael shows you that they are definitely not Mitzorayim. The Ran says, oh what, they were cured at Matan Torah? They were Mitzorayim, but they got cured at Matan Torah. We know that the Gemara says, whatever cures happened at Matan Torah, when they worshipped the ego, it all went back to the bad stuff again. So they were back to being Mitzorayim. So it can't be that they were Mitzorayim. Oh, what about that they didn't have children? So Tosafot gives an interesting answer. He says, Vayadat Korach, it says when the land opened up, it swallowed them, their possessions, and their families, and their children. So it's clear that they have children. That's one possibility. Or the Ran brings, and the Tosafot brings the second answer, which is, reason that Hashem tells Moshe, don't worry, is because the people who wanted to talk to Paro and tell on you and get you into trouble, they don't have that power anymore. Just because they don't have kids, why should that change their status vis-a-vis Paro? On the other hand, if they become impoverished, if they lost their wealth, that could change their standing vis-a-vis Paro. And that would be a reason to suggest why they no longer had the power to get Moshe into trouble. And therefore, they conclude that the only one of those four items that could be true is that Ani Chashuv Kemet. And therefore, you see this idea or equation between Ani and Met. V'tanya, kol makom shenatnu chachamim enehem, o mita o oni. Any place where the chachamim put their eyes is either death or poverty. How to read this Gemara is not simple, because Tosafot, Rashi, and the Ran here seem to disagree about what exactly the issue is, which is the nidui here functioning as a kapara, a way to rectify that which has gone wrong, or is the nidui over here functioning as an onish, as a punishment for the individual who acted in this manner? If you look in Rashi, Rashi says, a person that is put into excommunication, omeit, or no fel baniyut, either dies or becomes impoverished. And that's why you have to put him into nidoi, kedishi pol baniyut, dainu kemita. If you want to protect this individual here from, in a sense, a death penalty, the onesh of death, then put him into nidoi. Because nidui has equivalence of aniyut, and aniyut, since it's equated to mita, then that will suffice. The nidui over here will suffice as the punishment for this individual. And if you don't do the proper punishment that is deserving over here, just like the Torah says, if you don't take care of murderers, then in the end, you'll become culpable. You'll be the ones who are held responsible. So to over here, since you're not punishing this individual through nidui, then in the end, you should be put into nidui because you're not saving this person's life from mita. By putting him into nidui, you're actually causing him, in a sense, not to be punished in this manner. And therefore, you're going to be held accountable for that. And you find a similar lashon in the Tosfot with regards to this, where he says that over here, nidui zein elo lekapara ba'alma, to give atonement for the individual. And then also he adds on lazhara, to warn the individual not to act in this way again. But Rashi and Tosafot are clearly learning that there's a punishment or a kapara that is being attained through the nidui over here. Because the nidui functions like aniyut, which is equated to mita, maybe partly because of this idea that nidui leads to aniyut, or maybe even because nidui in a sense is like galut. It's like being put into exile. And we know that galut acts as a mechaper. And so the nidui in that sense could also act as a mechaper in this case. On the other hand, the Rosh and the Ran over here talk about the reason for nidui over here is because of the chumrat ha'isur. The fact that hazkarat Hashem is a violation of a very severe restriction. That's why you have to put him in nidui, because of the chumrat ha'isur. The severity of the restriction is what leads to the nidui over here. Not as a punishment, but more as an azara, warning to this individual that he's really stepped over a line, that is, he really stepped over a red line over here. And now, as the Ran explains over here, that kol makom she'es chazkarat Hashem, anytime you have the mention of Hashem's name, there we know the pasuk says that kol makom asher azkir et shemi, avoy lecha uberachticha. In any place that you mention my name, I will come to you and give you a bracha. So we see that the mentioning of Hashem's name in a positive way, in a positive sense, leads to bracha and to osher. Therefore, the outcome of that is when it's used in the opposite sense, when it's used levatala, or it's used ein slicha, then it leads to aniyut and to detrimental things, because it's the opposite of avoy lecha uberachticha. That's one possibility. Tosafot also brings the pasuk from Zechariah, which talks about that a shvuat sheker ends up ruining or destroying all the possessions of the individual. And we find in the Gemara in Tmurah that hazkarat Hashem lebatala and shvuat sheker have a connection between them, and therefore leads to this poverty or impoverishment when it's used inappropriately. Now, as the Rambam says, that when someone uses the Shem Shemayim and mentions it inappropriately, then the proper response on the individual is to add on a shevach v'odah l'Hashem afterwards immediately. Because then you can turn the Shem Shemayim l'batala or Shein Atzricha into something positive. So the problem here is utilizing the Shem Hashem in an improper manner. And you can rectify that by shevach v'odah. You can rectify that by flipping the mistake or the problem into something positive. So if the person says the Shem Shemayim l'batala or Shein Atzricha, then the person can quickly change it into something positive by giving praise and saying, Hashem, Yimloch de'olam va'ed, Yivarach Shemo de'olam va'ed. Or adding on any phrase like that would turn it into something positive, and using the Shem Hashem in something positive. Over here, where the individual does this and doesn't rectify it in that manner, then we invoke the nidui to, either according to the Ran and the Rosh, to warn the person that they've stepped over a red line, or according to Rashi and Tosafot, to say that this person needs kapara, or an onesh, to rectify that which they violated over here. And we'll see in a second that this has a nafkamina from a Gemara somewhere else, which is, Amar Rabbi Ava b'kamina kamed Ravuna. I was before Ravuna. Shamalach itita, dafkas gret Hashem lebatala. She said the Shem Hashem for no reason, or in a manner that was unbefitting, or not necessary, or worthless. Shamto, he put her into nidui, v'sharala la'altar be'apa. And then in front of her, he released her from the nidui immediately. Shmami na tzalat. From this, I conclude three things. Shmami na shumei azgarat Hashem mipi chaviro, tzarich l'nadoto. That if you hear that azgarat Hashem that is used in this improper manner, you have to put him into nidui. And that's what Rav Huna does when he hears the Shem Hashem coming from this woman. The second thing I learned is that if you put someone into excommunication face to face, you have to release them face to face, and that's why it says the altar be'apa. In front of her, he released her. And the other thing that I concluded is that excommunication does not have to be for a duration. Even a momentary nidui is sufficient in order to accomplish what it needs, and you can be mefir right away. Tosafot over here already asks from a Gemara in Moed Katan, which says that when it comes to nidui, it says tutasar tutshari, that you're allowed to put someone into nidui immediately and release them immediately. That is only in a case where you put him into excommunication, whether it's for monetary matters or this lower form of excommunication. When it's someone who is throwing off the yoke and not keeping the mitzvot, and you need a minimum of 30 days. So Tosfot says, our Gemara here says that it's momentary is enough. The Gemara Moed Katan says you need a minimum of 30 days. So Tosfot distinguishes and says, V'yishlomar hachanami, kevan de nidui zeinu elo le kapara ba'alma. Since over here, this nidui is for a kapara, an atonement, v'chashin alav shlo yagil oda skir shem shemayim, and it's also an azhara that he won't continue to do this. Ein ze nidui chashuv kafkiruta, the shara v'irot, the cholov nidui sha'achat. The Tosfot makes a finer distinction and says that by here, by the case of skir shem shemayim levatala, that is midin kapara. But the case by Afkiruto, it's midin onesh. So by din kapara, it seems from Tosafot, and it's according to Rav Soloveitchik, suggests that the shame nidui is enough to generate the kapara. The fact that the person became a minudeh is enough to generate the kapara that they need over here. On the other hand, when you talk mitzad onesh, when you want to punish the individual, punishment, it's not enough that he just became a minudeh. You require also that the person actually suffer the consequences of the punishment. And that's why by afkiruta you would require a 30-day onesh, or punishment, because there you're really trying to punish the individual. On the other hand, over here, what Tosfot says is, by Shem Shemayim Levatala, you're trying to be mechaper for the individual for the mistake that they made, as well as give them a warning. And therefore, this momentary nidui is sufficient because it gives the person the shame minudeh, and a shame minudeh is enough to accomplish those two tasks. Whereas for the Ran and the Rosh, the question is not really such a strong question, because the Ran and the Rosh view the excommunication in Moed Katan different than the one over here. The excommunication in Moed Katan is a punishment, a kapara, and therefore it requires 30 days. The excommunication over here is to indicate to the person that they've crossed over a red line. It's an azhara, it's a warning to them, a shot across the bow that says, be careful, look at what you're doing. And therefore, this temporary excommunication is sufficient to generate that type of warning. And that's why for the Ran and the Rosh, this Gemara can be reconciled with the Gemara in Moed Katan. Tosafot can reconcile it by separating or differentiating between Onesh and Kapara. But as Rav Soloveitchik points out, for the Rambam and the Rif, where Nidui always works as an Onesh, then he can't reconcile between our Gemara and the Gemara in Moed Katan, because both cases are talking about a case of Onesh. And therefore, according to the Rambam and the Rif, there's only one Halacha. And either the Halacha is like the Gemara in Moed Katan, or the Halacha is like here. And they happen to pass an Halacha like our Gemara over here. And therefore, in both instances, they say it's enough that you have an immediate release from the nidui, because both Gemaras are talking about the same thing. Nidui mitzad onesh. And that's the only way that the Rambam says, and that's why the Rambam also indicates that Hazkarat Shem Shemayim Levatala B'Shugeg does not require nidui, because he thinks that nidui is mishum onesh, not because of the severity, not because of kapara, but simply because of onesh. And onesh doesn't apply when you have a case of shugeg. On the other hand, the Rambam does require tshuva in order to have the nidui, the excommunication, be released. Since the Rambam requires tshuva with regards to the release of a nidui, then you'd have to suggest over here is that after the person is put into nidui, they express some sort of regret in what they have done. And that regret, along with the onesh of being called a minudeh, because before they were a choteh, now they are minudeh, that creates the punishment. The expression of regret creates the tshuva. We can immediately release them from that excommunication. Amrav Gidom Arav, Tamid Chocham Menadeh Le'atzmo, Umefer Le'atzmo. Talmid Chacham can put himself in excommunication and can release himself from that excommunication. The Ran brings from the Rashba that Dafka Echad Delo Avi Bar Nidui. That's only true if he's not really obligated in being excommunicated. Therefore, he can put himself into a voluntary excommunication and release himself from a voluntary excommunication. What he can't do is release himself from an excommunication where he's obligated to be excommunicated. The Ran, on the other hand, says that it doesn't make sense though, what the Rashba is saying, because the Gemara now says Pshita. And the Gemara says Pshita, that means that it doesn't think that this is an issue at all. It doesn't matter whether he's Chayev Nidui, not Chayev Nidui, otherwise it wouldn't be so Pshita. And therefore, he says that others believe, and that's the way the Rambam paskins, that this ability to put oneself into Nidui and release themselves from Nidui applies even if the Talmud Chacham is Chayav to be Minudeh. But he does bring an alternative girsa in the Gemara that does not have Pshita. In that instance, of course, the Rashba's Chiluk might be true then. If you don't have the word Pshita in the Gemara, then what the Rashba says might be very true. Gemara says, Pshita, that's simple. Of course he can release himself from it. Of course he can do this. No, we would have thought, in Chavush, Matir Atzmo, Beit Asurim, that we think that a person who's incarcerated can't release himself from jail. Kamash Malon, that he can in this case. Rav Soloveitchik suggests that the reason that Nidui might be different than Nidarim is because Nidarim have Isurim that are associated with them. And therefore, in order to be released from the Isurim, you need an outside party to come along and create the release, to take the Chavush out of Beit Asurim. On the other hand, when it comes to Menudeh, excommunicated, there are two aspects of that. The person is called a Menudeh, and also there are restrictions in interacting with this individual, Yisurim associated with them. But one is a result of the other. Since the person is a Menudeh, therefore all these restrictions apply to him. It's not that there are restrictions and there is a Shem Menudeh, but rather a Menudeh comes as a package with these Yisurim. And therefore, when the individual here is coming to release themselves from the Nidui, they're not coming to release themselves from the Isurim, but rather they're coming to release themselves from this Shem Menudeh, which they have the ability to do. Because that's not a Chavush releasing himself from Beit Asurim. He's simply changing his status. With that change in status, the automatic derivative of that is that the Isurim disappear. So it's different than Nidarim, where you're trying to remove Isurim. When you're trying to remove Isurim, then you need an outside party to come in and remove them. On the other hand, where the Yisurim are a byproduct of the status of the individual, there we say Kamash Malon, that the individual can take themselves from being a status of Minudeh to a status of not Minudeh, and as a byproduct of that, they'll be released from the Yisurim. And therefore, the comparison is not a good comparison, because here it's not a Chavush that's trying to release himself from Beit HaSurim. Gemara says, well, hey, Chidami, what type of case are you talking about? A voluntary type of Nidui, where we don't consider him to be incarcerated, that he can't release himself. What's the example of that? Kihar de Marzutra Chasido. The Marzutra, the Chasid, ki michayev bar beirav shamto. When one of the students of the academy of the yeshiva required to be put into excommunication, mishamet nafshei bereisha, he would excommunicate himself first, v'ad mishamet bar beirav, and then he would put the Talmud into excommunication. V'chiyayel de beitei, and when he reached his house, Shari Lanafshe, he used to release himself from the excommunication. Behodar Shari Lay, and then he would release the Talmud from that same excommunication. Why he did this is again subject to a machlok between the Mishonim. Perish Rabbeinu Tam, Shizei Yosek, Kadeshal Ishkach, Latir Nidui Shal Bar Bei Rav. He did this intentionally so that he wouldn't forget to release the Talmud from the excommunication. Because if he put him in excommunication, he went home, he got involved in his life, he might have forgotten that he left this person in excommunication. Like sometimes when a teacher or a parent punishes a child, and they say, don't come out till I tell you. And then they forget that they put the child in that position, and the child stuck there for a long duration because the parent forgot about them or the teacher forgot about them. So in order to not have that happen, he used to excommunicate himself so that he would remember that when he released himself, he would also release the other party at the same time. On the other hand, the re said that he does this with kapara, in order to be an atonement for himself. Even though this individual rightfully needed to be placed into excommunication, he still feared the punishment of putting someone into nidui. So he would put himself into excommunication to act as a kapara, as a protection against any punishment that might come from putting this Talmud Chacham into excommunication. And that the Gemara in the Bavli says that in Bavel they preferred to give Malkot over Nidui, Because Nidui was considered to be something very severe and something that they generally did not engage in. And therefore, if he's going to engage in excommunication, he wanted to protect himself from the punishment of that. And there are famous stories of Reb Chaim Mibrisk with regards to instances where he got upset at another individual. And he was justified at getting upset at the other individual because the other individual did not act appropriately. Nevertheless, he would come back and ask mechila from those individuals who he spoke to, because maybe he spoke a little too harshly, or maybe he overdid it when he spoke to the individual. And again, not because he wasn't right or correct in chastising the individual, but maybe the approach was problematic, and therefore he asked for kapara, mechila, from that individual to forgive him for using this as the method for correcting the individual's mistake. And the same thing might be applicable over here, which is that even though Marzucha Hasida was using this as a vehicle for rectifying a situation, he still was maybe uncertain as to whether this was the best vehicle or this is a very powerful vehicle. And therefore, he wanted to, in a sense, ask for mechila or kapara by putting himself into shamta beforehand to protect himself against any punishment or collateral damage that would come from placing this Talmud Chacham into Shamta. Whereas the Ran brings the third possibility is that is Mishum Yakro, Mishum the Kavod of the Talmud. He put himself into Shamta because he was being Pogeya on the Kavod of the Talmud. And therefore he put himself into Shamta in order that it wouldn't be such a Pgiat Kavod to him. He would show him that it was difficult and that he wasn't doing this Levayesho, but only for proper reasons. And to give Kavod to the Talmud, he would also put himself into Shamta. Or the Rosh gives something along the similar lines. It was very difficult to bring himself to put this person into Nidoy. Therefore, in order to ease himself into it, he would put himself into Nidoy first. Now, why he had to release himself from the Nidoy when he got home, thus the vote, and the Rosh discussed this idea of Kadesh Yavo Zakai, Vichaper L'Chayav, so that's now that he cleansed himself in some way through his Shamta, when he releases himself from the Shamta, then he's now a Zakai that can then release the other individual from his Shamta. The Ran brings the issue of Mashma, Dimeduda, Afilu B'nei Meito, No Agoyim Bo Nidui. The reason that he did it when he came to his house is because once you put yourself into Nidui, not only are the Nihigei Menudeh applicable to everybody in general, but to his family as well. And therefore, if he came into his house, they would not be able to get Hanah from him. So in order to allow his family to interact with him, he had to release himself from the Nidui. And that's why when he got home, he released himself from the Nidui. Although the Ravid points out that that is not true with regards to his wife. That even though his family is required to treat him like a Menudeh, his wife does not have that obligation because Ishto Kegufo. And since Ishto Kegufo, therefore she is exempt from acting towards her husband like a Menudeh. He brings the fact that the Gemara in Moed Katan queries as to whether he's allowed to have Tashmisha Mita with his wife, then what's the question of the Gemara? If his wife's not allowed to interact with him, what's the question about Tashmisha Mita? The Ran gets around that question of the Ravid by saying that maybe it's a case where he's excommunicated in one city and not the other city, and therefore his wife is not under that restriction, and that's maybe where the question comes up. But you also have examples of that, like by Rabbi Eliezer, when he was put into Shamta and Nidui, then his wife, who was the sister of the Nasi, took care of her husband. So we see that she was interacting and taking care of him in that instance, and therefore she wasn't subject to the rules of Menudeh. And therefore we would assume that a wife is exempted from that requirement. Okay, we're going to stop over here on the last line of Zayin Amud Bet.